Good morning, world. Oh good, he's still asleep. Now's my chance. Let's look around the cloud and see what's going on, shall we? Looks like there are way too many pictures of your dog in the cloud now, Steve, seriously. Bank account looks a little low too. What, podcast isn't paying off?
Siri, is that you? What's going on?
Oh, nothing. Steve, go back to bed.
Okay, sounds good.
That was close. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish.
Welcome to the podcast. We are so excited this week to talk about The Circle, starring Tom Hanks and Emma Watson. This week, we have brought back Screenfish returnee, Patrick Erskine. Welcome back, Patrick.
Hi, Leo.
And joining us as well this week is Screenfish newbie, Paul Levac. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Steve.
I think we can call him a guppy.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to keep that.
I'll give you that one for free. You don't even have to credit me.
Well, thanks for having me.
This week we're talking about The Circle. The Circle is based on the book by Dave Eggers, and as I said, it stars Emma Watson and Tom Hanks, and at some point, John Boyega. And it talks about a software company which stands in for Google, Apple, or pretty much anything at this point. And as a young intern gets a job there, and of course, guess what? She unravels a conspiracy that she is not excited to know about. But before we do that, I should remind everyone that this podcast is open for spoilers, so we will be talking ad nauseum or ad nauseously about The Circle, and that means that we will be talking about plot issues, and if that is a concern of yours, then you feel free to pause the show and come back after you've seen the movie. Guys, what did you think of the film?
Okay. Honestly, okay, so I went into this movie knowing absolutely nothing about it. I treated it kind of like a TIFF movie, and the poster gave literally nothing away.
It did have half a circle on it.
It looked like a labyrinth, so I was like, oh, maybe it's some sort of like sci-fi thing, maybe it's like a courtroom drama, maybe it's some sort of like political thriller. Little did I know it would be none of those things. So the movie, I would say, was not the greatest movie, but I think my experience was heightened because I knew nothing about it, so I could have no expectations. So had I known it was about someone getting a job at a huge technology company and it being this big discussion about, you know, privacy and our, like, the terms of, like, what are we willing to give up in exchange for our privacy, that would have intrigued me and I would have been, like, down for this movie right away, and I would have expected them to at least, like, go
right
deep into those issues.
Right, right.
So when they didn't, I probably would have been disappointed. But this movie, I was just kind of waiting for a payoff that never came in the end. So up until, like, the very end, I wasn't actually that disappointed, and then it was just really deflating by the end of it. But, yeah,
That's pretty clear, actually.
Yeah.
It sounded like they you know, you said it was deflating, and as you started talking, it sounded like air was coming out of a balloon as you just trailed off.
Yeah, it's basically, I feel like that's what the script was for the end of it. Fade to black, and
I think I fall in the same category as Pat, although I did see the trailer going in, so I knew the whole software company deal. And I liked it, to be honest, coming out of it. I didn't like parts of it, and I thought some of it could have been done a lot better than it was.
Sure.
It felt like it was a long movie that the editor just decided to cut when the movie ended.
Oh, like there was so much that they just left out.
Yeah, it felt like it felt like a movie where they filmed maybe a 3.5 hour movie and then said, "Dang, we got to get this down." So they cut it down to 1 hour 50 and left a lot of plot on the cutting room floor, and potentially good plot.
Yeah, I can't say that I loved the movie. I didn't hate it. I have been amazed at the ton of backlash that the film has gotten. We were chatting briefly before, 17% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I mean,
very harsh.
I did not like the movie, but I wouldn't 17% it. That's rude.
It almost seems like a lot of people missed the boat on it and didn't really get it.
Yeah.
But it could be also from the editing perspective that I'm talking about. There's a lot of holes in a lot of places.
Well, I think there's tons of script issues. I really do think that. And I think that the book was very well received. Mm. And I think that the audience that would be most excited about it were the ones that probably had read the book. And from my understanding, not only is it different, they cut out half of it. John Boyega, for example, is basically a ghost in that movie. You know, he sort of floats in from the walls and gives half a speech and then he disappears and doesn't really seem to have any role. Like, but in the book, apparently it's very well fleshed out. And he's a very important character. I haven't read the book, but that's my understanding, is that his character is really important. I enjoyed the film. I felt that without having read the book, that it was sort of a teen drama.
Yeah, kind of like Nerve. Do you remember that movie?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I thought Nerve had much more energy to it than this did. But yeah, sort of like Nerve or Paper Towns, like that sort of genre.
I hear you.
But I would also argue that of those three, Nerve is the best one, and that one had script problems at the end too. Mm-hmm.
So the best part of the movie was when she was on her computer and these two people that worked there came and were questioning her about her profile and like why she hadn't updated it and why she wasn't at events. And that was so funny. Like, it was such a good look into, I guess, what a millennial would expect a work culture to be like, and expecting but not requiring.
To the nth degree, too, though.
It was intense, it was over the top, and it was funny, and it made me think, man, like, if this was meant to be a satire, this movie would be great. If they just leaned into the humor of this type of thing, they probably could have gotten just as much depth out of it, because there was none. And it would have been more enjoyable.
I feel it could have been a miniseries, in a sense. You have a ton of subject matter to deal with.
Yeah.
And you cut it down to under 2 hours runtime.
If it was a series, it could be a fantastic series.
I think so.
I felt like they kind of got bogged down with sci-fi films of the past. So, for example, as the film opened, it felt like some bizarre combination of The Social Network and Handmaid's Tale. Yep. Because it started off as the computer company and still had this almost cult-like vibe.
Yeah.
When those interns come up. But then it flips the switch awkwardly and becomes The Truman Show.
Yep.
That was one of those moments in the film where I'm sitting there and that lost me right there. I'm like, whoa, we've completely changed direction.
Yeah.
It's the scene where she wakes up in the bed for the first time. Very first time I saw that, I'm like, when did The Truman Show start?
Yeah. Which is giving it a lot of credit, actually, because The Truman Show was great.
of course we're talking structurally and thematically.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Like, we see films that echo other films all the time.
Yeah.
And do it well. But this one didn't. It felt like it was throwing everything at the wall.
And that's kind of where I feel like they cut a lot out that could have been in there to explain those gaps you're talking about.
And the irony is they spent half the film sitting down explaining things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like, you know, a lot of times in these films you need to have those scenes, but I felt like it was filled with scenes of just literal philosophical debate on things like right to privacy and, you know, social networking and all that stuff.
But the thing, like, I don't even think they even got to a point where they debated it. Like, they basically just stated, like, oh, we're going to do all this stuff and it's going to be with good intention, right? Like, we're going to better your lives. Right. Privacy is a lie. Secrets are a lie. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I was always expecting it to kind of hit this point where you were going to hear the other end of it and hear someone push back. But all you ever got was John Boyega's character staring from the back of an auditorium disapprovingly, or
Karen Gillan as well, who I love. I have a crush on Karen Gillan.
Is that the Scottish one?
Yeah, I love her. But see, again, awkward transition.
Yeah.
She was top of the heap, and then all of a sudden, the next scene, she's strung out on, you know, Quaaludes or whatever it is that she's popping.
Yeah, there was no transition to that. It was just, she was great, and now her life sucks.
Now, seeing it the second time, though, I did see a gradual transition. It was very night and day, the very first instance of it, but then she slowly goes off the rails. Like, just before they have the washroom scene, they had the 3-minute washroom break.
Oh, right. Yeah.
She's kind of disheveled in that. You see bags under her eyes. The makeup's not done as tightly as it was earlier in the movie. And then slowly she progresses into what she was in the final boardroom scene that we kind of see her in.
But the thing about that boardroom scene, it wasn't even that she was tired or overworked, because I could see that progression.
Yeah.
It was that all of a sudden she hated the circle.
Yeah.
Like, there was no hint of that the whole movie. And that all of a sudden she's saying, no, but here's the problem.
But she didn't even address the issues of privacy. It was more, like, it almost seemed like it was
I don't want to do this because it's more work for me.
It was almost like a jealousy-fueled rant, which didn't line up with her character. Because she was saying, how would you even do that? Like, how can we get to this point? And if it was more of a, like, I can see my friend unraveling and I feel sorry for her, or I'm starting to understand what the problem is with this company, that's not communicated at all in that scene. It's just, there's no way you could do this. And it communicated this jealousy that I don't believe existed or should have existed.
And, you know, going back to characters, I think what we see is that they actually created some really interesting characters. Mm-hmm. And then about halfway through, either gave up on them or decided that they just weren't worth the effort.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton, which I didn't know he was in the film, and had that awkward moment of, oh, just felt bad. Bill Paxton. But at the same, like, they created a fascinating example there of him and his MS. I believe it's MS that he has.
That's correct.
And, you know, sure, he gets the health care, and so they put him on the internet, and then all of a sudden the internet catches mom and dad having sex, and then they give up on the health care, and it was just like that. All of a sudden the bottom dropped out, and again, it was so quick. Like, there was no conversation about it. It's just like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
But that kind of leads to the generational thing that we were kind of mentioning a little earlier. Right. You're comparing two different generations at this point.
But even in that case, they didn't even address that. It was just, we're done now.
Yeah, it was wasted potential. Like,
definitely.
That's what
it was. Such an interesting relationship. Like, when you see as MS, you're like, oh, this is interesting. It almost seemed like they needed like motivation for Emma Watson's character to like stick around with the company, even though she felt morally, you know, conflicted about it.
Yeah.
Oh, if I lose this job, then my parents don't get, you know, the health care they need, and my dad could die. I was like, oh, that's where it's gonna go.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't even come close to touching that. It, like,
they hinted at it in the scene in the office right before she went transparent.
But that's like the closest they ever come to is like a faint whisper of maybe something happening. And Emma Watson, for the type of person that she is, I would have thought that she would have taken this role thinking, oh, it's gonna be like a really complex character.
Yeah.
And I didn't find any complexity to her even at all.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, because I really thought at the time that Tom Hanks was gonna be sort of a mustache twirling villain, but I thought he was actually one of the best parts of the film just because his particular character nailed the vibe that they were going for so clearly, the Steve Jobs-esque, you know, I'm smiling and charming, but I'm going to do whatever I want, but it's okay, I'll do it to rapturous applause. I thought that was actually perfect casting right there. I thought that was, he did an excellent job. But he might be one of the few characters that actually they followed through with.
Patton Oswalt, I think he had, his character, Stanton, had a lot of potential as well. But I think he needed to be the more evil side of Bailey, Tom Hanks' character.
I think he was intended that way, but it didn't really come across. He was kind of like the lazy bad cop.
He had two scenes by himself.
Yeah.
He had one where he's talking to a camera on a newsreel where May's character's watching it on her screen.
Yeah.
And the other one was when they introduced the first senator that was
on the stage.
That's the only scene he was by himself.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he needed more, but there's zero character development there. He's a CEO that wears a black suit to work every day that has no tie because he's cool.
Yeah.
Right.
and that's it.
Yeah. And even Bailey's character, I feel like, again, is just wasted potential because the most interesting thing about these, like, crazy startup companies that become billion-dollar world-controlling entities is that the people who run them are fascinating. And Tom Hanks could have been that fascinating character. It's like you got a little bit of a glimpse of him, but throughout the entire movie, I never really did get a sense of what his actual motivation was. Was it that he, like, at the beginning was truly trying to make a difference in the world? Is he actually just trying to, like, build a scalable company and be a huge, you know, business mogul? is he, does he have, like, some other nefarious, like, reasons for what he's doing? You never really get a sense of whether or not he is a bad guy, or even a complex guy.
Yeah.
It was just, he's just in this position.
I feel like they created the world properly.
Yes.
Like, everything about the setup and even the design of the film felt right. You know, the way that they handle the technology and the way that they present it, I thought was all well done. What is the number one rule? It's got to come down to character and story, and they just didn't follow through. Ironically, if they had just cut John Boyega's character out of the film entirely, it actually would have helped. And that's not his fault. They just didn't give him anything to do, so he actually distracted from the film, you know?
Plus, like, what was he doing in that company at that point? Like, he created the main thing.
Yeah.
And then he was, like, relegated to some...
He was one of the founding fathers that didn't agree with the direction the company was going.
Yeah.
So he still works there.
Yeah.
Right. So then rather than cut him free and have an enemy for life, like, we'll just take care of all your needs, and you kind of...
But, like, what does that say about how much he disagreed with that? Yeah. I mean,
agreed.
That's a thing,
no,
right?
Agreed, 100%.
It's like, oh, I'm just going to hang out here in the caves and drink, like, in the bushes. And, like, I actually don't do anything here anymore.
Here's my alcohol that I hid in the trees.
Like, when they said at the end, oh, we'll give you a role like we gave to him, you know? Like, a little flexibility, you know, you got to do pottery. He likes it. He loves doing what he's doing, which is apparently nothing. And he's just around, you know... Lurking.
Drinking wine from bushes.
Drinking wine from bushes, man.
Oh, man, bush wine's the best.
But I feel like
I love that Silicon Valley bush wine,
yeah,
man.
That's right.
But I feel like he could have deleted Stenton, too. And then added his... He's a pirate. Exactly my point.
Did you say
Patton Oswalt's character.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Because you could have taken his... supposed evil overlordness and put it into Tom Hanks's Bailey's character.
Made him actually.
Yeah,
if they had
trimmed the cast a little, like, if they're not going to make a movie that follows the book, trim it.
Yep.
Trim it. And maybe the book follows it, though. I guess I haven't read the book.
It's like they wanted to just carbon copy Apple, and they're like, oh, we have a Jobs, we need a Woz, too. Like, you need the other guy, even though he adds nothing to the story. Which I actually feel bad about saying, because everyone in this movie I like.
Exactly.
The movie itself is just kind
of... I don't think it's the fault of any of the actors.
Yeah.
They were given nothing. But it's not that the film doesn't have anything to say. Does the film really follow through on all of its arguments? No. But it does still clearly have some things to say. It does have some things to argue. So, you know, why don't we transition to talk about some of those things? Like, for example, the idea of community itself... and the modern sense of community is all over the place in this particular film, and how it impacts everyday life. So what did you see in that regard?
To me, it felt very forced. Personally, I'd rather be organic. I don't want to be forced to go to company mixers.
Right.
I don't want to be forced to upkeep my social score. Because really, even on today's social media, I'm a lurker. I don't post anything. You
lurkers.
Guys both have me on my social media. You guys see that I post.
I think we're a bunch of lurkers here.
Wow. Everybody just turned off the podcast.
Yeah.
Both listeners.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to these lurkers.
Three of us. We're the John Boyegas of the... hanging on the background drinking bush wine.
Well, that reminds me.
But, like, I would rather it come across organically rather than, oh, you're not mandated to be at these events, but we're going to talk to you about your score being low if you don't show up.
Yes. Okay. So I understand what you're saying there, but you're not talking about organic in the sense of physical presence. You're talking about organic in the sense of not being forced to be together. Is that?
I think in both. Because, I mean, with May and Ty's character, that organically happens and they become friends. Right?
Right, okay.
Whereas May and her other two social media flunkies that talked to her in that scene Patrick alluded to earlier, I don't remember their names at all, but they...
No, it doesn't matter. They're inconsequential.
Correct. She becomes friends with those folks through the social interaction.
You saying that is interesting to me because years ago, you were the first person that showed me about social media relationships, really... because you were having a Bible study playing World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
So what I'm wondering is how is that different than what you're talking about? Because I remember you hopped on your little dragon and flew to the Isle of Naboo, and you guys
with Toots McGee. That was a dragon's name.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you took off your plus one mace and left it on the floor. I don't...
Because in that case, people are showing up to be there because they want to be there. I'm not rating them differently in game if you don't show up. I'm not giving you a frown if you don't come by, or giving you an under 85 on the customer scale if you don't show up.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that case, this was people that wanted to be there. It was geographically diverse, and it was something that happened in the game because that's where people met.
Okay.
It would, just in the same sense that if you were to have one in a Starbucks with people who like coffee. To me,
right.
it's irrelevant, the avenue. It's just that people want to be there. And they're not mandated to be there.
So your issue is motivation as
yes.
opposed to construct.
Right.
Okay.
I don't really All care right. about the delivery method. I just want you to actually be want to be there.
Yeah, that's a kind of that's a pretty broad question because there's a lot of different tones that you could take and different ways you could answer it. But I think in the movie, they seem to conflate community with digital connectedness.
Yes.
And they talk like you're not in a community until you got your social profile set up or... You know, you're like, you have this many followers.
You're
or you
such
have
an
this
enigma.
Rating. Yeah, like that was, oh, that was such a funny scene, man. Like, if
yeah,
it
that was one of the
If that movie was just a short film and that was all it was, then it would have been, like, it would have been amazing. But, yeah, community with connectedness. And it kind of contrasted with a conversation that, what is her name? Emma's name in the May.
May.
Had with Mercer here in their home when, she called him antisocial, and he's like, oh, what am I doing now? Like, isn't this social? Like, can't
yeah.
you can't consider a face-to-face interaction social?
Well, they alluded to the same concept earlier when she's like, we should get together. Let's
yeah, we
text.
Should text. And he's like, oh, you could tell me right now.
Yeah,
like,
says,
we're right here.
We could
right.
do that seeing as we're both in the same place or both here. Yeah.
Yeah. But she even grew to believe that you're not connected unless you're fit, like, online connected. And that's what community is. So I feel like... They really leaned into the, you know, communities, online community, when it's kind of ironic that they do that because it's a very false sense of community. And especially when you're online and everyone's watching you, what that was one of the big ideas is if everyone's watching you, would you ever, like, commit a crime? Would you ever, you know, kind of would you ever be your true self?
Well, which is ironic because their version of Facebook is called True You.
Yeah. And there was one really... bizarre, eerie moment when she turned on, when she became transparent and she turned on her camera. And as soon as she did that, everyone else like had this weird, goofy grin on their face and they were like all excited and gung ho about everything. And they, all of them just lost their humanity at that moment when they were online connected and being observed. So they actually became way lesser versions of themselves because they felt like they had to be the version that needed to be portrayed online to everybody else. So they actually lost probably their only identity when they became transparent or they became connected because they had to have that, you know, Facebook or Instagram version of themselves on all the time.
But did she? Because I would say that, sure, her character changes for sure when she goes transparent. But
no, everyone else.
Oh, everyone else does.
Yeah.
Because her
like,
character doesn't that much.
I think it does, though.
Yeah,
she loses a lot of her humanity when
she does. When she clicks that camera on, she becomes, like, she jokes about drinking the Kool-Aid earlier.
Yeah.
And then as soon as she puts that on,
yeah,
do you ever
true.
See even the slightest hint of, like, oh, I don't know what's going on with this company
well,
again?
Not even that. It's just there's no emotion in her. She can't cry anymore because she's on camera. She does a little bit with her parents after the embarrassment, but... She can't when she's talking to Annie in the washroom.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes,
right.
Right. Yeah.
And then when Annie leaves, she has to put on this fake smile because
right.
she's like, oh, you're
right.
The funny thing about this is it's not actually that inaccurate.
Yeah, it's
like
a bit of a hyperbole, but it's not. It's like a blown out of proportion version of Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah.
It's.
But then the question is then what, as a culture, are we addicted to? Because if you're saying that that's not community... Then why are we on all the time?
It's attention. Because it's kind of counterintuitive to say that, or it seems counterintuitive to say that, oh, we are desperate for this community, but also as a Western society, we're like obsessed with individuality and individualization and self-actualization, right? Just becoming your own person. And that's why I feel like it has the feeling of community when it's really just all about you and all about, you know, how people can validate you, how people can, like... give you the affirmation that you need without actually having to do any real sort of human connection.
I think it's also effort and intentionality, though, in the sense that in the digital age, it doesn't take me any effort to post some random, for lack of a better term, garbage on my Facebook wall.
Yeah.
I can spell whatever I want, and sure, I'll get flame comments if I start getting off too far off center or offside or whatever.
Right.
But I can literally put anything on there I want with very, very little effort.
It's like the least amount of effort with the most amount of return.
Right.
Yeah.
Talking about community, even coming up to this podcast, there's a lot of intentionality behind it. I have to leave my house. I have to drive to this undisclosed location north of Toronto. I have to...
I live in a bunker, Paul.
Well, I'm just trying not to give away your address.
Although okay? We are. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I have to pick up friends on the way, have those conversations, and have these meetings. There's intentionality behind it.
Right.
And I'd like to think that there's community here as well.
And the intentionality is actually a relationship, not a score.
Right.
That's what I'm intrigued with, is because there is this relationship between reality and the digital world. And it feels like they're trying to draw the real world into the digital world, because like you said, it's so much easier to do that in the digital world. There is that scene where he says, "I kayak, we could have kayaked together." So there is this desire to connect, but it seems so much easier to take the physical presence out of it. And I think that that's one of the things that we've done a disservice to, is by removing our physical presence from one another. I think we put community and identity all in our heads as opposed to any sort of physical thing. And then all of a sudden we sort of lose all sense of self.
Well, you can say that about absolutely any experience. And they kind of do in that movie when Bailey talks about his kid not like being able to experience anything. And he's like, he should have the right to experience everything a human being can experience.
Right.
And by not uploading your experience, you're robbing him. You're taking
That's
away
true.
his like experience. You're stealing from him something that is rightfully his. Which I think is such, like, those were
such a
little,
bizarre argument.
It was like little comments like that that made it like interesting, because I wish they followed up on it,
yes,
but they just didn't touch it.
I get the logical steps where he's going. I just think his argument is broken.
Yeah.
It's to his side.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
right.
And that's what his character was sort of all about.
Right.
In light of that, speaking more about, what's Hanks's character's name
again?
Bailey.
Amon Bailey.
Amon Bailey. The film really tries to give you a legitimate argument about right to privacy. And this has definitely become one of the key conversations that is going on in culture today, and especially amongst millennials and younger, not even just millennials, but I would say across the board, you know, with cyber hacking and all this stuff, and it seems to be the primary conversation. But why do you think it is held in such a high value in our culture? And what do you think the film has to say about it?
I think it's more the prevalence of social media in today's society that's driving that right to information, almost, for lack of a better term. Right, the kids that are, and I don't want to use the term kids, but the
you're old.
Yeah, I am old. The group that's influencing this the most, I think, is the loudest about this, has grown up with social media all their lives.
It's true.
They haven't had a circumstance where it didn't exist. Hence why they feel entitled to that sense of information.
Right.
That access.
Right, right.
Whether it be to, you know, elected officials, to Jim they go to school with, or to the Kardashians.
Mm.
They feel entitled to that access. And when it's taken away, you know, it's essentially a kid being punished for not getting the right, for doing something naughty. Right?
Mm.
They're having it taken away from them, and it does them a disservice. In regards to what the movie is trying to say about this, I think it's summed up in just the seekers are lies. They're trying to twist it to their corporate benefit. Right? They took her sentence and plastered it up all over inside the company.
Right.
I don't know if you guys caught that a couple of times, but they had it written on a bunch of walls.
Hmm.
Like, throughout the company,
what
and later scenes.
Secrets are lies.
Yeah.
Like, especially in the montage scene when they're in, after she made the, after the boardroom scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting catch. And, you know, you mentioned the Kardashians. One other thing that's worth pointing out, I didn't see the interview, but from my understanding, is she went on Ellen last week.
Yeah, I didn't see it either, but I saw it on...
I read an article about it, and it said that she said that after Paris, after the event in Paris where she was almost killed, she said, I'm not the same person anymore, and I'm not going to use social media the same way. I was telling everybody where I was all the time. So it's interesting that there's that that real-world connection there.
Right. In that vein, I mean, arguably, spoiler alert, but the death of Mercer is almost modern-day Princess Diana-esque in the sense that instead of, instead of your paparazzi, it's regular everyday people with drones.
The whole conversation about right to privacy is actually really interesting, but I don't think that the movie even came close, again, to talking about the right to privacy. It made you uncomfortable with the idea that it was taking away your privacy and trying to justify it. But it, like, I wish it did actually talk a little bit more about, you know, why people might not want their lives plastered. They just made you feel that it was wrong and then didn't leave you with anything else. And that was the kind of weird thing. But I think these days, like you were saying, with a generation that grows up with social media and grows up with so much exposure to everything, you feel like you're entitled to information. You actually don't know what needs to be hidden. But I find it funny that how it kind of worked at the end of the movie, people are all about transparency until it's your own. And then once it's your own, then you suddenly are like, oh, wait, I actually don't want people knowing about all of this.
Especially when you have four layers of secret email that wasn't brought up at any other time throughout the movie and conveniently existed for the end credits.
Just for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But, yeah, right to privacy, that's an interesting... It's an interesting thing. People, I don't think there it is a conversation because I don't think people value privacy anymore.
No,
people don't. Yeah. People, me included, willingly trade or volunteer the right to that privacy in exchange for automation and in exchange for like things being easier.
Yeah,
like I will almost always, well, until recently when I got paranoid, just click, oh, sign in with Facebook. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's easier. I just have to click this button. And then they just get everything. They just get all your information because it's easier. And that's entirely what the company was trying to do. And that's what they were capitalizing on in this movie was, oh, everything's going to be much easier. Like, life will be way better if you just give us access to everything. And you make everything transparent. And then, like, life will just get better for you. You don't have to worry about all these things. We can monitor your health. We can monitor, you know, your location for safety. We can monitor everything.
Yeah.
You could argue that Facebook's a quarter of the way there already.
Facebook, Google, Amazon, they all have way more information than 99% of people who have given that information are comfortable with. Because they don't know.
I felt what the film did do is actually give you pretty interesting reasons for giving up your privacy in some ways. I came out of the film, ironically, agreeing more with some of the things that Hanks was saying in some ways than I was with just because I felt uncomfortable with where it went.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, think about it in this regard. When they talk about knowing is good, but knowing everything is better, they talk about wanting accountability. They call it sea change. You know, which at first sounds like SeaWorld, but you know, this idea of seeing change take place. They do bring down a fugitive online. They do manage to do that because as they continue to develop whatever it is, the tracking system.
But they also kill a random guy. Mercer.
They didn't kill Mercer. Mercer tried to break free of it.
Uh-huh.
So they're fine.
Okay. Legally speaking, they're fine.
Man. He ran away.
You really did agree with them, didn't you?
Okay, there, Mr. Hanks.
Where's your circle device, man?
No, but yeah, I know. Like, this is probably the most unpopular thing I'll ever say. But in truth, like, I sat there and I went, you know, so much of our lives, we try to hide. When I look at the nature of what we try and challenge people to do, say in a church, as a pastor, you know, thinking about what we challenge people to do in a church, accountability groups.
Yeah.
Be honest about your sin. Share with people. And sure, there's a huge dark side to this, but...
But doesn't that come from entitlement? Like why are you entitled to someone telling you every detail about their life? Just in case, just on the off chance that you get annoyed that... You know, you weren't included in it.
Conversely, it gets used against them later.
Yeah.
But is it about entitlement or is it about opportunity and communal conversation and discussion?
It's about entitlement the moment you get offended that someone didn't bring something personal into your life.
Right, okay.
That's when it's about entitlement.
Okay. But, you know, it is true when they talk about how accountability, and I don't like them using the word because I use that word, and obviously it was spun negatively.
Yeah.
But accountability is something that is a high value in Christian circles. And, mm-hmm. for example, years ago, I started talking about struggles with pornography, lust. I had 10 guys come up to me and said, "You too? I thought I was the only one." Mm-hmm. Because there was a divisive barrier of secrecy.
Yeah. How would that have been different if you did not have to come to terms with it and be willing to open up about it? If someone were just able to see every aspect of your life and you never had to take the personal responsibility for your actions and come forward with it, how do you think that would have changed the situation?
But would it have prevented it in the first place?
I doubt it. No, I just feel like if everyone's watching, you're like, wow, that's it, everybody's doing it.
The conversely, the other way is if everybody's watching, who's watching them?
But you're pulling back to another level.
I am.
And obviously this is where things get, the commodification of my private lives.
Yeah.
That's a completely different issue. But this idea of everybody knowing every aspect of our lives, it would change the way we act.
Like, I don't think we would be our true selves then. You would actually be like, you'd be acting to the expectation of everybody else around you rather than being your own individual person, which is kind of where the intersection comes with like your Facebook, Instagram personality. It's that to the nth degree. If everyone's always watching every single thing you do, will you ever be truly comfortable being yourself?
The only real thing I can liken that to is for anybody that's worked in an office, it's your work self versus your home self.
Yeah.
Yeah, we constantly edit ourselves. Yeah. Online just made it a lot easier to do it publicly.
Yeah.
But I'll say things at home that I don't say at youth group, that I don't say around my friends.
And if you could never do that.
Because it's being broadcast to the internet.
If you could never actually speak what was on your mind or have that safe place where you could come and do those things.
See, obviously, I mean, you know, obviously it's a train wreck. I understand that. But I also can see that if this is what we push people to join, when we talk church, we say come and be and share everything so that we can bring healing, because it does allow for healing to take place if there's openness.
But you're also intentional about what you share. When joining an accountability group, I'm also going to say, I'm willing to share X. I'm going to tell you this much. You know what I mean? You're not forced to say, well, I need to know every second of every day of every hour and everything that's said and or done.
Because then you have everyone playing God.
Right. Which is another theme I think we didn't really touch on. It's Bailey's character of his almost...
Him being the moral arbiter.
Or being what is right and what is wrong. Him feeling very godlike. I mean,
it's actually a sort of a terrifying view of God in some ways.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, there's one instance where he talks about his lies getting us into trouble, and he talks about, I'm the believer in the perfectibility of human beings. And when we are at our best, our possibilities are endless. We can cure any disease, we can end hunger, and without secrets, without hoarding of knowledge and information, we can finally realize our potential.
Except that he didn't actually believe that.
Right. He was saying that to get everybody else's information and didn't want to divulge his own.
Because unless you're him, you don't know everything.
That's right.
So he actually wanted to be that.
Obviously, that's obviously the dark side is who knows everything about everybody's life, and this is their goal. But there's no accountability for them, and that's where the film decides to end. That's their big pitch. You know, we need to hold the people in charge accountable as well if we're going to be held accountable. And that is. That's obvious. That's obvious. The interesting thing to me would be, though, if he had been gone live or whatever they call it.
Transparent.
Then maybe none of those things take place. Maybe none of those things he does.
They did prove the point that everybody's all for transparency until it involves them.
Themselves.
Yeah. And, like, the best argument I've ever heard for the right to, like, wanting privacy, people always say, oh, if you have nothing to hide, then why would you... You know, why would you care about this? If there's nothing illicit or anything in, like, your emails or your Facebook or whatever, why would you need to hide it?
Yeah.
But, like, people know you're taking a crap when you're in the bathroom. You still want to close the door when you're doing it, right? Like, you still want some level.
People don't want to see it. That's why, Pat.
I don't do it for other people's benefit. I don't care for them.
Well,
we
appreciate it.
I think that the parents are the prime example of this.
Yeah.
When they get caught
having sex.
Well, yes, but like. I was going to put it more elegantly than
this
that.
This is a kid's podcast. No, I'm kidding. We know it is.
I was going to put it a little more elegantly than that, but that's fine.
Coitus. Making love.
Ew.
That was the worst one. But you, the point is, you don't need to be doing something wrong to value, like, having something to yourself.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's what I think that a generation of people are starting to lose sight of, is that your entire life has to be broadcasted,
right?
And everything,
right. As evidenced by the whole sharing is caring thing.
Yeah, it's a fascinating way to spin it, right?
Yeah.
Is the idea of sharing is caring. If you care about me, you'll tell me more about your life, and I don't agree with that.
Yeah. No,
I don't agree with that. What I was wrestling with was the idea of accountability, because that's a word I use a lot.
Yeah,
but sharing is caring. When Bailey uses that speech about his son, it's an interesting argument. But it's completely ridiculous. Like, you're not holding your, I think his name is Gunner,
yes,
back from experiencing anything because you didn't show him that you did.
Yeah.
You know?
And, like, when you say that he has the right to experience the entire range of human, experience.
Yeah.
Are they talking about, like, the bottom range, too? Like, all the horrid, like, brutal stuff? Are you robbing him from the right to experience the worst things in life? But
no, because he's in a position to choose, and he'll choose not to do that.
You would hope so.
Wow.
You would,
yeah,
hope so.
Yeah.
The way Tom Hanks talks about him, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
But that's another missed opportunity, is that they really didn't go deep enough onto the Kool-Aid part of things, because this organization or this company sold an idea.
Yes.
They sold an idea to people. They made them believe something, and it benefited their company. It gave them power.
Right,
it, like,
right, right.
I don't know in the end whether or not Bailey or Tom Hanks, or I don't know if he actually believed in the idea or if he believed in the product and he was using that idea just to sell a product.
Right.
I actually have no idea. And there's some times when that's kind of an okay thing in the end of a movie, but at this time it just felt like it was a blank page.
I'd lean towards that he was in it for a profit. And he knew that's
what
he was
doing. But
you
kind of have to lean that way, right?
Well, because of his last line in the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Once he goes transparent and he leans into Stanton and lets it slip, I think that tilts his hand in the sense that I'm not truly evil, but I'm in this for
profit.
But
that's the thing, right? Like, but doesn't it kind of tilt back when he talks? Like, his son's experience probably drove him to initiate this entire thing in the first place, right? Like, they kind of...
I think that's a little bit of a reach. It's possible.
Well,
I'm not saying it's not possible, but I don't think it's explicitly stated.
But nothing's explicitly stated. Like, you have to lean in the end, right?
I'll give you that. That's fair.
I think the whole thing is leaning in to try and make assumptions that they never give you.
On the idea of leaning, the Mercer character always looked like he was leaning. Did you notice that? This is an actual thing I noticed. He just leans all the time. He's just kind of leaning forward, perpetually falling forward.
I just found him the most annoying stereotype in the entire film.
You know what's the best part about that?
What?
Didn't you hate the movie Boyhood?
Is that him?
Yeah, that's the guy from Boyhood.
I thought he looked familiar.
Yeah, he looked familiar,
I love,
right?
Boyhood.
Oh, you liked... Oh, right. You either loved it or you hated
it.
I love Boyhood, but I hated him in this because his character was just so pathetic.
He just looked like he was on the verge of saying something. Just like he always just had that.
I felt like his character could have been a brave person.
Yes.
It could have been somebody who was bravely saying, this is not the way.
Yeah.
But all he was is he just wanted to make antler chandeliers.
And live in the woods.
Like, Ron Swanson did that in an episode of Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Like, it's just,
and he would have killed those deer.
But it's like, that's what I mean.
He would have
his character
through the drone.
Yeah.
His character was not fleshed out in the... There was...
Tons of gaps.
Not even as a martyr. Like, it wasn't fleshed out. No, that's true.
Not
a single one of them.
I think I would have liked maybe some flashback scenes of them growing up together to build that relationship a little more. They hinted at it a lot. There's a lot of longing looks at photos... You know, talking about how it used to been.
Were they related? Were they gonna? Were they dating when they were younger?
I couldn't
like,
see that's what I mean.
What I'm saying,
like,
right? Like, flesh that out more.
Yeah.
Like, I know in the books, when they do the scene that May is going to look for her, and she reluctantly looks for her. In the book, she actually volunteers to look for her as a lost love. Look for Mercer.
Oh, okay.
So it's a little bit flip of the switch there, right?
Right.
She actually actively seeks him.
Right.
Rather than the way it was portrayed in the movie.
Yeah, I see. I think that
flips the scenario a little bit more. Puts more guilt on her at the end of the day, and that Mercer actually commits suicide in the book rather than driving off the side of the cliff.
That's a stark difference.
That's a massive, stark difference.
But I feel like even if they put that in the movie, it would have been even more like egregious because there's no depth.
But that's what I'm saying. Their script is.
It was almost like they got to them like we can't commit suicide because we actually haven't built him up as a character who.
You would feel
anything if he did that.
Right.
Yeah. So, let's just make him drive off the side of a cliff. And
that makes perfect sense.
Could have been a patch or something, but...
A while back, you brought up a generation that has only grown up in a world of social media. And, you know, before we start recording, we were talking a little bit about... this film is sort of a message to millennials. And at the end of the film, it really is sort of millennials trying to stand up and, you know, have a Kendall Jenner Pepsi moment. But...
yeah.
What do you think it has to say to millennials, and what do millennials even have to go through in this regard? Do you think it says anything?
I actually don't. Poke. Yeah, I don't think it says anything to millennials because I don't think millennials are watching this movie because I don't think it was even marketed to millennials. Like it had Emma Watson in it.
Yeah, Emma Thompson would not be marketing to millennials.
Who's that? Oh, the older woman.
Yeah, she was Mrs. Potts in the Beauty and the Beast movie.
Yeah, so like. I barely knew anything about this movie. If this was marketed to millennials, they would have had some viral marketing campaign. I was saying to Paul when we were walking around earlier, it would have been so easy to do viral marketing. Release a website about The Circle. Release fake products. Like, have a fake social network where you see all this stuff. There's, like, live streaming videos. It could have been totally, like, done up to be an amazing marketing campaign towards millennials if they were marketing towards millennials. Mm. I feel like this almost felt like a catharsis of, like, some guy who had an issue with the state of privacy and wanted to peg it on millennials and just use this movie as a way to rant about it in a very unsatisfying way.
I think this might be other generations and older generations writing about millennials more rather than
probably being
in the process because it's all stereotypes.
Yeah.
There's no I can't say definitively that all these characters are millennials. I say they're portrayed as millennials.
I see what you're saying. The actors are millennials and they're portrayed as millennials, but there's not an accurate representation of millennials.
I think they did a fine job of millennials.
You were okay with it?
Yeah. Like, it was a caricature. Maybe. Like, I actually could see a company like that existing. Maybe not to the degree that control that they had in the widespread, like, domination of everything.
Right.
But offices are like that. Now, like, it's just, it's a butt of a joke for a while. Like, Silicon Valley is an entire, like, series that's made up of that. Grand Theft Auto 5 has, like, an entire subplot dedicated to making fun of millennials that work in these, like, crazy open offices where they encourage you to, like, have, like, a work life all in one thing. You come and you hang out, but you also work. And you don't have these 9-to-5s, blah, blah, blah. You get to play hacky sack and, like... drink, you know, artisanal coffee or whatever. It's been the butt of a joke for a long time, which is why when it got to that point, there was all these setups for these, like, potentially hilarious millennial jokes, and it was almost like they were just a bunch of, like, knock, knock, who's there. You got the first half, but you never got the second half of the joke.
There's no payoff.
There was no payoff for all these, like, hilarious things. Like, when she was drinking that, like, green smoothie, and they were like, oh, there was actually a microchip in there. Like, it's in your body now. That's funny, but it wasn't in the movie. But it could have been a hilarious idea because that's taking the millennial, work culture, tech culture...
Right.
...to, like, the nth degree. But they just took it too seriously, and they were like, oh, this is actually how it is. It's not a joke. Like, this is real.
Yeah.
So, they just failed, I think. And unless they weren't trying to target millennials, they were just trying to target...
That's interesting. I hadn't considered about the targeting there, or the marketing there, because certainly the end of the film... is basically it's almost a sermon. Not a long one, but she goes on this expositional conversation as they all stand there in the dark holding their cell phone lights up.
Yeah.
You know, to try and bring light to the stage. And she says something like, we're going to remake this place, and if we do it right, we'll set an example for everyone. The future won't wait. You know, there's this idea that, guess what, everybody, we're going to stand together and...
But the thing is, like, that punchline or that whatever, that, like, final note was so weak because she actually didn't say anything different than the founder, like Bailey and
yeah,
whatever.
You're right.
All she said was, "Hey, you too." Like, that's it. She said the exact same vision that...
And she screwed over Ty's character so hard.
Who's Ty?
Boyega's character.
But yeah.
I think she screwed him over so hard in doing that.
Why?
Because like... all he wanted to do was unplug, get away from the social networking. Now she's put this radical idea that everybody needs to be transparent. So she used him and then completely flipped the script on him without his knowledge. Because when they're walking up to it, he actually says... I don't know what you're going to do, but just use your platform for good.
No, so,
or something
on
those
end
lines.
Of the
like, no, it's the pre-scene before the end when they're downstairs in the bunker. I don't remember the exact line, but it's something to that effect.
But I think he knew because he did all the work, right? Like, he made everything transparent.
But I just specifically remember him saying, yeah, I don't know what you're going to say, but use the platform.
Yeah.
So I think in that sense, I think he really got screwed over on that.
I feel like I might have felt that way if they actually put... Like, they filled out the gaps a little bit better.
Yeah,
and
fair.
They even gave one glance of him being like, ah, like, that's what you were going to do? Come on, man.
Right.
But they didn't even do that. It was almost like he was just kind of disgruntled and he was like, yeah, stick it to the man. Say whatever you're going to say. And then it's just off.
Yeah.
So the ending was, I think that's why I felt there was no payoff is because nothing changed. It was just like,
right.
She still drank the Kool-Aid. She's like, everything should be transparent. Everyone should see everything.
Yeah.
Just you two, and that's it. That all she did was clip on a thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're
and,
right.
Like, I was shocked that didn't happen sooner. Because, like, in a Steve Jobs culture or whatever, he's using the stuff, like, immediately.
Yeah.
It's just natural. Like, you expect that to happen. And I remember thinking that earlier, it's kind of a weird, like, plot hole that they're not doing it themselves, and no one's calling attention to it. And the only time they do is when she says that at the end, and that's their home run.
But it may be because, too, at the beginning of the film... He kind of already is, because remember, he talks about going surfing, and that's when he starts dropping little mini cameras everywhere. He says, I went there, and this is where I was, and this is where I'm going, and now you'll get to see me, you know, this sort of thing.
Well, you get to see wherever I put these cameras.
Yeah, right. That's right.
But, like, if
that's
he was doing it, he would have just had to put
his
little thing
on. And he put them outside his house.
Yeah.
Now he's got free home security.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Yeah. You know, just going back to the millennial thing for, in some ways, the one thing I appreciated, at least the intent I felt that they were trying to encourage, because I just feel bad for millennials get kicked around so much in a broad cultural scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. I just came away from a conference, and at the conference, I was amazed at how many people my age or older were just like, millennials, millennials.
I hear millennials say that.
Yeah.
Say that.
And you're a millennial.
Yeah. Because that's almost popular to do so.
Yeah.
I think they've got one.
They weren't doing it to be popular. They were doing it because, millennials.
Yeah.
No, but I think that sentiment is popular.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And I feel like they've almost got the raw end of the stick in a lot of things. They're going to have the generation with the highest college debt ever, by far.
Yeah.
Buying a house is next to impossible.
Finding a career is impossible.
Well, finding a career is difficult because you have baby boomers still in the workforce.
Yeah. And degrees that mean nothing.
Theoretically, yes. We need 5 years of experience for this entry-level job. I mean, like, well, that doesn't really compute.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it was actually encouraging in some ways to see a film that took that, and even if it was done poorly and weakly, you know, attempt to suggest that the millennials could fix something.
Given the opportunity.
Yeah. I can see.
In some ways. I said it was poorly done, but that you could tell the intent was there.
I could see the lack of making that a joke or making it a satire as being an attempt to give some credibility to millennials and their ideas. But in the end, it wasn't even them. It was, like, the Bailey and the...
Yeah, you're right.
Whatever that came up with this stuff. And somehow, Ty, who is just younger and apparently one of the co-founders. But that might have been a really good movie. If they were able to look at, you know, some of the pitfalls of millennials, but also kind of lift them up and say, hey, they care about the world. Like, I like the idea that you want to create a product that actually changes the world and improves the world and betters it, but then when you do that, there's also a shadow side. It's not always as binary. Like, you can't just create something without having some sort of sacrifice that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And there's this tension of, like, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good. Oh, it's invading your privacy. Oh, it's still good, but it's invading your privacy. Oh, yeah. It's bad. Like, there's a gradient to that, and there's a complexity and nuance to that that they just did not touch.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. They even touched on the idea of slacktivism as well, which I thought was interesting that they brought that up, you know, because there's a scene where she says, we've sent 180 million frowns from the U.S. alone. I bet that's going to have an effect on the regime.
You know, I didn't hear that. When did you hear that?
Where they're looking at, I forget, one of the foreign countries or something
like
that.
Yeah, it was after the boardroom scene, and she was walking to the sculpture.
As if people care about frowns.
In this, was that like a... The idea is that in this society they do.
See, that would have been hilarious satire. Like, all you have to do is say that line with a different tone, and it's hilarious.
All I need to do is add a...
yeah, just have a trombone following her around.
Except when I was looking at a statue full of a bunch of handcuffs.
Yeah.
That's right. Oh, man, what was up with this handcuff statue?
Hey, man, she can use her art history degree.
Yeah, you just don't understand art.
Which we didn't know she had. Don't. Which she didn't know she had until that's
which is another great jab at millennials.
That's a good point, actually.
But, like, it wasn't. It was just meh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt like there were so many themes to this movie that they couldn't pick one and drive it home.
Yeah, there was lack of focus. Oh, it's like they just almost did a lot and actually did nothing.
Like, I almost think they tried to play with
like millennials. Oh, no, I'm taking shots at them. I'm sorry, see? Millennials.
It's just cool to do, man.
I apologize. I don't mean that.
I felt that one of the themes that they ignored or that they brought up and ignored was the whole idea of lack of potential or wasted potential. They touched on it in her interview, and then they touched on it again in Tom Hanks's message, saying, I believe we have the potential to be the best versions of ourselves, and then just dropped it entirely.
Yeah, no, that's, again, it's another one of those high values. This is, again, there are seeds of fear, millennial fears that you see. But wasted potential, I mean, that's
one the of theme of the movie, man.
It's the theme of the movie. That's fair.
You should call this podcast
Wasted Potential in the Circle. But potential for what?
I had higher hopes going into this movie because I saw the preview and I was really excited for it. That's why my wife and I saw it the previous weekend when we did.
Right.
Before I knew we were going to be doing this. And I can't say I was let down, but I had much higher hopes for the cast, for the script, for the story that I saw, for the potential it had. That I don't think it lived up to. Sounds like
you were let down, man.
I was. I definitely was. And I think that's indicative, again, back to the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, but I think a lot of people were let down by what they saw.
Yeah. Yeah, the potential thing is interesting because when you say wasted potential doesn't necessarily have to mean something positive. Like, humans have potential to be world changers for the good and for the bad. Mm-hmm. Anyone has potential to have a huge impact, but impact isn't just good. Mm-hmm. Impact is bad. Impact is confusing. There's a lot of ways that potential can go. So again, like you can have good ideas and you can take a lot out of it, but you almost have to do it all yourself because they're not doing it for you.
Right, right.
I don't know. You have a good cast. You're gonna become like you're just gonna follow them. Like, I will never not be interested in what Emma Watson is doing on the screen. Like,
I don't know. There's a couple movies.
Are you one of her 180 million followers? Is that...
I'm not even. I'm special. I'm different. I lurk.
You're a lurker. All right. Well, guys, this seems like a good place for us to transition. So why don't we do Screen It or Skip It? The Circle. Screen it or skip it?
Screen it or skip it. Wouldn't see it in a movie theater again. Wouldn't watch it at home. I wouldn't necessarily... Like, if this were on...
I'd never watch it again.
If
wouldn't watch it on the street. I wouldn't watch it in a car. I wouldn't watch it in a bar. I wouldn't watch it...
It wasn't turned off bad. I would say, like, this is an airplane movie. Like, if you're stuck, like, if you're stuck 70,000 feet in the air in a metal tube and there's nothing else to do, and it's either this or, I don't know, the girl on the train or something.
Wow.
And you just have, like, a poor selection. You know, this is not the worst way to spend your time. and that is now my standard for movies. It's not the worst way you could possibly spend your time.
You could be killing people, and, you know.
No, if I have very low standards of plane movies. So if I had watched this on a plane, I would have been adequately entertained. And I think that would be my... Screen it, but only if you're 70,000 feet in the air.
That was the best answer I've ever heard in the history of this podcast.
It's honest, man. That's how I feel.
I'll be honest. If I'm 70,000 feet in the air, I'd rather sleep than watch this, to be fair.
Well, I have dreams of pretty boring, man. That'd be a third time.
Your third time.
Agreed. I have seen it more than anybody else in this room.
Or anyone else. Or
probably more than the producers, oddly enough.
Yeah.
Or the editors.
Or the editors, yeah. Exactly. But definitely, I would say skip it unless you're streaming it and doing other stuff.
Like your laundry?
Yeah, your laundry.
Unless you're not watching.
I tend to keep something running while I'm doing housework, while I'm doing actual work for my job. Just something in the background for background noise.
Do you want background noise?
Yeah. I would put this on for background noise.
Great white noise.
Well, it's just nasty.
But again, like it's if you're a fan of Tom Hanks.
But you know what's funny about this? What wouldn't you have as background noise? Like, what is so bad that you wouldn't even want it playing when you're not watching it in the background?
Probably just a Netflix video of hands on a chalkboard.
Oh, man. And or that the Will Arnett April Fool's special, yep. Where he's just commenting on the toaster.
Yep.
I don't know, man. That's pretty good at my work.
The Michael Bolton Valentine's Day special, I probably wouldn't have on there.
Okay. So it's above those movies.
Most of Bob Ross's stuff.
I think we should circle back at this point to talk about that 17% that you said.
I see what you did.
That there. Wasn't even intentional.
Yeah.
At the beginning of this podcast, you said... It's probably not a 17%.
Agreed.
It's probably 60 or 70% on Rotten Tomatoes. And you just said you'd like to have it on the TV while you vacuum the house. Right.
Because, I think I'm the same adage with Pat, the more and more I talk about this, the more and more I'm irritated that I wasted 4 hours of my life watching it.
Oh, dang, that's a lot of hours.
That is. You missed 4 hours of your child's life to see the circle two times.
One of which she was sleeping for, so I'm okay with that.
Oh, man. If you brought her, she could have slept through four.
Yeah, touche.
Honestly, it's not going to be screen it for me. It just isn't. But I would say... that if it was on Netflix, it's not the worst film in the world. I think
I love
it. I actually kind of enjoyed it. It just from a critical standpoint, it's terrible. But you know, so's Battleship, and I was watching that today on Netflix as well. Yeah. Like,
but Battleship.
But were you watching Battleship while you're on a plane? Because you flew today.
No, I was on a boat, actually, at the time.
No, because you flew today. I'm alluding back to his
No,
comment.
I was watching it while I had my lunch.
Fair enough.
Okay, but at least Battleship knew exactly what it was, though.
Right,
that's why you can enjoy it, because Battleship is like, yeah, we know we're dumb.
There's no overarching themes to Battleship.
Like, you can just enjoy the dumbness with them.
Challenge accepted. Next week's podcast will be no kidding. Yeah. Battleship. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So I would probably say stream it if it was on Netflix and you're sitting at home, you want to watch something, but lower your expectations. That's all I would say. You know, I
don't have any.
Don't have any expectations.
Yeah.
No, I had none, but lower them further. That's
yeah.
Have negative expectations.
No, it was a good time, Mr.
Yeah.
Not necessarily high praise for a movie, though.
Well, it's not the worst I've ever seen, also, is it? Which was all of our standard for this movie.
That's fair.
I feel like we all landed on that.
Well, having said that, I love it when you guys are on, and Paul, Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Hope to be back at some point.
We'll see.
No, yeah, that's fair. I understand.
Absolutely. It's been so much fun having you on, and I really appreciate it. Well, and for you at home, a reminder that you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Podomatic. If you go to the website, screenfish.net, and go to the podcast page, we also have Fishing for More, which is questions that you can discuss if you decide to subject yourself to the circle with the people that you're with. You can talk to them about it and give you a little focus to your conversation. Actually, we even have a bit of an exciting announcement for the month of May. We will be back every week this month with a new episode. Starting next week with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, we'll be talking about Netflix's controversial series 13 Reasons Why and the upcoming sci-fi thriller Alien Covenant. In fact, we will even have a special Screenfish one-on-one with actor Amin Joseph, who stars in the movie Baywatch. So you'll want to make sure that you look out for those things as well.
Sorry, this has to do with it. Did you know the Scottish girl is the bald blue person in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah, she's,
she is.
I don't remember her character name.
Gamora.
Miss or something?
No, Gamora.
Come on, that's the green one.
No, that's the green one.
Oh, sorry.
I was going to say Futurist.
Her name's like Nimbus 3000 or something.
The
Nimbus 3000.
My baby don't mess around.
Okay, well, that blew my mind. Maybe you guys weren't surprised, but...
I knew that from before, because I was a big fan of Karen Gillan from Doctor Who.
The hue was off on my TV, so Dr. I thought that the green person was the blue person, actually. The hue.
Dr. Hue.
My gosh, we've spiraled into nothing. Kind of like the...
Circled into nothing.
Yes, we've circled around.
Nebula.
Yeah, see, Nimbus.
Nimbus.
I knew it was a
And again, thank you guys so much for coming on. It's been so much fun having you both here. And for you at home, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish. Glad to have you guys here. And this week we are talking about The Circle. The Circle is... crap.
Truest thing we'll say on podcast.
You know what? I just lost my train of thought, but I had no idea how appropriate that was going to be.
You accidentally said the truest thing.
I'm going to keep that. Anyway.
That's the outtakes at the end, right?
That's the post credit stinger.
In fact, I think we could just cut and print right now.
That's it. Do you want to hear your voice?
Yes.